Hi, this is Brian Doyle with the International Sports Federation and Global Serve, and you are listening to the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast with Steve Anderson and Matthew McKay.
Welcome back to Youth Ministry Sherpas, episode number 2. Matthew McCabe here.
Hey, welcome back. This is Steve Anderson. We've actually done this once before. Probably not very well, but...
But we're figuring it out.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. Appreciate you being back for a second episode of Youth Ministry Sherpas, helping youth workers to keep going.
In our last episode, we talked about our calling into student ministry, and Steve and I shared our own stories of calling, and we've asked you to share stories of your calling and things that are challenges to your calling on our Facebook page. We're enjoying the conversation.
Yeah, we're glad you guys were participating, and we encourage you to join the Facebook page if you haven't already, and also subscribe to the podcast, and if you could give us a review on iTunes, that would be fantastic. Share this with as many people as possible.
Great. All right, episode number 2.
Yeah.
The Wonder Years.
The Wonder Years. We're going to talk about the first few years of being in student ministry, what that is like, and a few things that we may have learned from that along the way. So, Matthew, do you even remember what it was like to be in your 20s?
You know what? You're asking that question as if that was forever ago. It kind of was. And yes, I have vague memories of what it was like to be in student ministry. I actually remember the first day at the first church that I served at. I was probably 21 years old, maybe almost 22. And it was a little Presbyterian church in Green Bay. And my first day on the job, I walked in, and the secretary at the church, she volunteered at the wildlife sanctuary in town. And so she nursed and rehabbed injured birds back to health. And so I walked in ready to just tackle youth ministry, and there was this like injured bird behind the desk. It just was very strange.
I think she was giving you a sign of how you were going to be in a few years.
You know what?
It was like an injured bird.
It was probably a sign of things to come for sure. But yeah, but I remember now, interestingly enough, and again, I know this will date me, but the one thing I remember about my first 2 years in student ministry is it wasn't until my third year in student ministry when I got a computer.
Oh my goodness, really?
So my first 2 years in student ministry, I didn't have a computer. And I think about how I spend my days today.
Right.
Like what I do when I get to the office, how much time I spend on my computer. I'm wondering to myself, what did I do with my time? There was no computer.
Wow.
Like we had one computer in the whole church.
Yeah.
Big desktop, you know, took up half an office. And if you had to do something, you had to kind of schedule time on it and go do it and then print off what you needed.
You actually had to use a phone. You had to call people on a landline to get in touch with
them. Yeah, it was interesting. I remember one of the things I was proud of myself of. It was a pretty small church. We probably had a youth group of maybe 25 high school kids, maybe, you know, 20 consistently, 25 if they all came. And by the end of my first year, I knew everybody's phone number by heart because you had to had to dial it.
You
had to dial it every time that you wanted to call them. And, you know, it was phone hanging on the wall that would just ring and ring if nobody was there. It was the weirdest thing. Like,
that's crazy.
It's hard to even think about. But anyway, it worked. Somehow we did student ministry without cell phones and computers back in the day. It was pretty wild.
I can't imagine. I remember my first couple years as a volunteer in youth ministry. Before I wasn't a pastor until I was in my 30s, just doing some incredibly dumb things. I remember a trip we took to Florida, and I don't know why the youth pastor signed off on this. He was dumber than I was, apparently. But we had a trip to Florida for a conference, and we took 15 passenger vans with leaders and students in the vans, and we actually drove through the night in those vans. We slept on the floor of the van while someone else drove. I would not do that today.
That does not seem like a good idea.
That was
Steve.
A bad idea then, and it's a bad idea now. It's a miracle that we lived to tell that story.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
I remember when I had just, because I finally had a job and some income, not a lot of income, but some income.
Oh, you were making the big bucks.
I bought a car, a decent car for the first time. My first car that cost more than $300, let's put it that way. And it was an 87 Volkswagen Jetta. Now, this was in 91, so it was still a fairly new car.
Yeah.
And I lived with a family in the church for my first 2 years in student ministry. I lived in their basement for cheap rent and cheap food. And
you still live in their basement, don't you?
No, I do not. Oh, no, okay. I have my own house now. Okay. But thanks for mentioning that. and this family had two boys in the youth group. They were a junior and a freshman. We were on one Saturday, we were heading out to some other people in the youth group's house for a youth group party, and I had them in the car, and it was way out in the country, you know, it was up in Wisconsin, back on these old roads, and big old long straightaway, and of course the kids were like, hey man, how fast does this car go? And I thought, you know what, I don't know, and they're like, let's find out, and I was like, yeah, let's find out. And I got that car to 105 miles an hour.
A Jetta.
Took me like 4 miles because it doesn't go fast there, but it got there. And they were cheering, and it was wild. And I thought, I am the greatest youth pastor in the world. These kids adore me. Until we got home later that day, and within a half an hour of being home, the young freshman sang like a canary, told his mom everything.
Great.
Oh, Lord have mercy. She bore a hole in me. And of course, I remember thinking at the time, like, she's totally blowing this out of proportion. Why is she getting so upset? But of course, now I am a parent of high school kids. And I'm telling you what, if a youth leader went 100 miles an hour with my kid in the car, I would lose my mind.
I agree. Although the fact that you did it in a Jetta, there is something to admire in that. Because that is quite an accomplishment.
Quite an accomplishment to get a Jetta.
I'm surprised the doors, the hood, the roof didn't all fly off on that trip.
Right? But yeah, it's amazing some of the things that I did in those first couple of years. Now that I look back on it and think, wow, why did I think that was a good idea? So that's where the idea came from here to talk about this is like, what are some things we need to think about? And, you know, what were some of the challenges that you faced in your first couple of years?
I remember my first year as a volunteer. I'll talk about that first. Being new to the youth ministry, being new to student ministry in general, having not been part of the church or growing up in a youth ministry, just feeling like, I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know what was expected of me, and I didn't know anybody. And that's a hard place to be. So I just remember feeling on the outs, like, why am I here? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be doing? And being naturally pretty introverted, it was challenging just to feel like I knew people and to know what was going on.
Right. Yeah, I remember those first couple of nights at youth group, you know, with this group of students who didn't know me from Adam, and I didn't know them, but yet they knew each other, and they had history together, they had stories together, and it kind of felt like I was on the outside, but yet I was in charge, and that was it was an awkward feeling.
Yeah, that's hard. As a volunteer, you know, I wasn't in charge, but nevertheless, I felt like I wanted to do a really good job. You know, I wanted to succeed. I remember the expectation of having kids over to the house or spending time with them outside of the ministry. I remember having these two kids over to my house one night for dinner with my wife, and they're like wrestling on my living room floor, and I'm thinking, am I cool? Is this what's supposed to happen? Is this what it's supposed to look like? Because I think it's cool.
You just didn't know.
I didn't know. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah. I remember one of the challenges for me was I hadn't trained to do youth ministry, and it wasn't what I went to college for. It sort of was an accident. We talked about that in the first few episodes of how I kind of came to be, but just really having honestly no idea what I was doing.
Right.
Like what is – I'm in charge of this.
Yeah.
Now, I had the benefit I had was that there was no student ministry at the church before I was there. So their expectations were super low. They didn't know what it was supposed to look like either. So we were figuring it out together.
Yeah.
So that was definitely a challenge.
Yeah. For me, coming into this position, already having been a seminary, having a little bit more experience and so forth, one of the challenges that I faced right off the bat was getting to know the culture of the church, getting to know the culture of the area. Maybe if you're in a place where you haven't lived before, you don't know what it's like to be there. Every area of the country, every area of the world has a different kind of subculture. Every church has a different vibe. And it's hard to know how to navigate that. I remember coming here to Maryland, and one of the biggest challenges I faced the first few years was figuring out how to manage the conflict with sports, with youth sports, because it is an obsession around here. And I don't know that I've figured it out to this day, but that was it's always been a challenge. It was a challenge then. How do we navigate that with kids? And just trying to figure out what the church and the culture is like.
Because it does change. I remember when I moved from my position in Green Bay. And of course, Green Bay, a very old school town, very very religious town, actually, 87% Catholic.
Really?
And so because of that, on Wednesday nights, which were CCD nights in the Catholic Church, the public schools in Green Bay were not allowed to have sports practices or games that started after 6 p.m. to clear the schedule for CCD at the Catholic churches.
I guarantee you that's not the case there anymore.
Probably not, but it was at the time, and that allowed that. And then when I went somewhere else, that they didn't have that, and I thought, wait, now what am I supposed to do? Like, there's not this night that's, like, carved out that all of the kids have off because it's cultural. And so, yeah, to figure out those cultural things.
Yeah.
Starting out at 21 years old at a church, one of the challenges I faced was, I guess, what I call a soft condescension. You know, because I was so young, because I was such... I was young. And, of course, at that point in time, I was pretty sure I knew everything, even though I knew nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of think, like, but I got this. I can figure this out.
If you're 21, 23, 25, you're listening to this, you're thinking, well, I do know a lot of things, and I'm pretty good at this job. You probably are, and I'm sure you're well past where we were at that age. But there's a lot of things that you still have yet to learn. So we just want to encourage you to keep learning and to be a learner and a listener.
Right. And so interestingly enough, that soft condescension, you know, these these parents and, and some of the other leaders in the church who kind of just had this mentality of like, we really need to help this guy because he's just a hopeless little snotty-nosed college kid.
It was kind of them.
You know, it was kind of them, but they did it maybe not as kind as they could have. But anyway, but it really actually worked out well because I'm kind of a doer. And I think youth pastors in general are doers. It's kind of a signature quality of like, I want to just get things done.
Do things, be with people, be
do
active.
Do things, be with people, be active. But their desire to help so much really helped me develop something I probably wouldn't have developed otherwise, and that is the ability to let other people do significant things in ministry.
Yeah, that's really important.
When I was 21 years old, I had nothing but time.
Right.
I wasn't married. I lived with a bunch of guys in an apartment.
You had a Jetta.
I had a Jetta.
You could go anywhere at any time, as fast as you wanted to.
Well, really fast, absolutely. You know, and so it would have been easy for me to just do everything.
Uh-huh.
A, because I had the time, and B, because I was good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, even early on, I was fairly good at it. And so, but because these guys didn't think I knew what I was doing, these parents, that they jumped in, and some of the volunteers started rising up saying, well, we'll take this. And I allowed them to do that. And of course, now looking back, I think that was actually a very good pattern to build, even though it kind of came through a challenging circumstance.
Yeah. It built in you a pattern that you could carry forward as you grew and matured and learned more things that has actually helped you a great deal, even though at the time it felt like you were being condescended to.
Yeah, it did not feel good at the time, but when I look back on it, it was good because I think I would have, and this is sort of something to think about, especially if you're early in student ministry, if you're out here and you're in your early 20s, just getting the party started. I think there is a tendency to want to do everything because you have time and because you can. But the reality is again, and part of the whole point of this podcast and the whole point of what we're doing is we want to see you keep going. We want to see you in student ministry when you're 45, not just when you're 25.
Right.
And some of those patterns of doing everything have to change as your life changes. When I got married and then when I started having children, if I hadn't have built some good patterns of allowing volunteers to do significant work and me not doing everything, so I'm out every night of the week and leading everything that is on our calendar or on our schedule, that would have been a very difficult, and there was still transition, but I think it would have been really hard had I not developed some good patterns early with the help of my condescending friends.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about it in a future episode, but the whole idea of feeling like we're the savior, we have to do everything. We are where the rubber meets the road at all times. It's all up to us. That's just something that we have to get rid of. You may be able to do that for a short time and be everything to everyone, but not for very long.
Right.
You've got to build that pattern into your life.
Yep. And this is about doing it for a long time. I want to help you guys stay in this.
Yeah.
You guys and gals stay in this for a long time to go.
I remember one of the challenges when I first came to this church. The senior pastor has 7 kids, and the oldest kid at that time was in the middle school ministry, so I knew that I was going to have her as well as all of her siblings, and that relationship with the senior pastor and his family was going to be very important to my survival, you know. And so it was a challenge. His oldest daughter was a challenge when she was 13 years old. She wasn't very nice to me. I teased her on occasion. I even pranked her on occasion, and she didn't take that so well. But I just knew that in my heart I needed to build a relationship with that particular student to win the favor of her family and kind of set a groundwork, a foundation for them trusting me as their youth pastor for their own kids. Because that's a big deal. Everybody, you know, every pastor wants their own kids to be ministered to well. And every senior pastor wants that. If they have teenagers in their youth ministry, they want their kids to be well taken care of. And so that relationship with those kids, there's a little extra something there.
Sure.
That you have to acknowledge, you can't ignore.
Yeah, and it feels wrong to say that.
It does, yeah.
But it's not. I mean, in my situation, it wasn't the senior pastor that had kids, but there was a few influential leaders in the church on the elder board and on the board of directors that had some kids in the student ministry. And again, not that you're going to show favoritism there, but you've got to establish yourself with those kind of families to earn that initial trust, especially when you're 21 years old or 22 years old. You really have got to do that, because there is a natural, like, oh my goodness, they're so young. And I see it now. Now that I'm 49 years old, when I look at a 23-year-old, I see that person very differently than I saw myself when I was 23.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It's not about favoritism or extra expectations. It's really just about building relationship. A cordial, welcoming, loving relationship that they feel like they can trust you. You are a champion for their kids in a good way, and they're going to give you a lot more responsibility as a result of that.
Which is something you're supposed to do anyway.
You should do that with every kid.
You're just targeting it early on with people that will help you keep doing this for 10 and 20 and 30 years down the road.
Yeah, because it's really easy to walk into that situation and just kind of think to yourself, well, I don't want to show any extra attention to them. So you almost go the opposite direction. And if you create bad blood with the primary families in your church, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Right.
And you just don't want to have to fight that battle. You want to win those people over lovingly, you know, warmly, affectionately, so that they'll trust you down the road.
There are too many other uphill battles that you're going to have to fight.
That's right. You want those people on your side.
You don't
want
to do that. And I think that's a good transition into, you know, the other thing I remember in my early years, my first few years.
The Wonder Years.
Yeah, the Wonder Years. Both my first few years, you know, in ministry at that church in Wisconsin, but then even when I came here to Maryland, my first few years there was the importance to really identify and recruit a couple of really key volunteers.
Yeah.
Not just volunteers, but volunteers who will also be your friends, because it's just tough work.
That's true.
You're going to need someone who's your champion. You're going to need someone who, okay, I can build this with these people.
It would be like if you were starting a franchise, a football team or whatever. You know, you want to get those people that you know starting out are going to be the kind of people you can build around, the character, the competency. My first volunteers, the first thing I did when I came here was I recruited the first two high school volunteers in our youth ministry. They were actually on the search committee that hired me, so I knew they had an interest in youth ministry. We had common interests because they're from Pittsburgh, I'm from Pittsburgh area, black and gold all the way. And we went out to breakfast, and I invited Scott to be part of this thing with me, this new thing that was being created. And at the end of that breakfast, he's like, hey, I'm in. And Erica, his wife, she's in too. We became dear friends. They served with me for a number of years. And they weren't critics. They were friends. They were volunteers with competency. But I could have done anything, and they were going to be on my side, be my fans, be my friends. And I just think the first volunteers need to be those kind of people, if possible.
Right. There's a place for critics.
There's
a place for people who are also competent volunteers but challenge you in ways.
And are different from you.
Right.
You want to find people that are a lot different. You want to find diversity. But you need a few key people that you can really relate to and feel comfortable. Right.
Those first couple need to be people that you know you like, that you like to be with, that you like to hang around with, and that will champion you, and that, who will be your biggest cheerleaders when you succeed, and your biggest cheerleaders when you fall flat on your face and go 105 miles an hour in a car with kids in the backseat.
Because the honest truth is, you're going to be with those people a lot. You're going to spend a lot of time with them. You're going to be traveling trips with them, going on retreats with them. You're going to be with them every week at your ministry. You're going to be training them. You want to start with people that you really like, can relate to, are going to do a good job, and going to stick with you through thick and thin.
Yeah, and so we would just challenge you to think about that. And regardless of where you are right now, if you're young, if you're new, if you're in your first couple of years, if you're in those wonder years of youth ministry, to just sit back and think, who are those people? Who are the people that I've recruited or that were here before I came, that sort of came with a package? Who are those people that are not only good, competent volunteers, but are also have the potential of being my friend, the potential of sitting at B-dubs with me and listening to me tell my woes or spin my exciting new idea that they'll just be so excited about that they can't stand it. So who are those people? And if you don't have those people, you need to get on your horse. You need to get to work because you need those people.
And the great thing is you're inviting those people into an adventure with you. If you're new in the position or you're new in youth ministry at all, to you, you're embarking on this new endeavor. It's an adventure. And if you call people into that adventure with you, they're going to be excited to walk that path with you. It's not like, hey, could you show up because we need more hands on deck. We need somebody to, you know, control the crowd. It's join me on this adventure. We're going to build this thing together. We're going to do something really great here. Be part of it. That's an exciting invitation to somebody.
Absolutely. So it shouldn't be hard to find those people, especially if you pitch it well and pitch it correctly.
Yeah.
So that kind of leads to another thought here. You know, whether you're in your wonder years, i.e. you're 21, 23, 25, you're just kind of getting started in student ministry, or maybe you've been in student ministry a while and you've recently started a new position.
Right.
You know, there are some challenges whether you're 22 and starting a new position in student ministry or you're 42 and starting a new position in student ministry. Were there challenges, you know, when you started here, Steve, at your current position, you were in your mid-30s, correct?
I was, right.
But there were still challenges being those first 2 years. What were those challenges that you faced?
One of the challenges was the church was a new church plant, so there was no established youth ministry, which was great in the sense that I was able to be the pioneer.
Blank slate, yeah.
But the older high school students who were part of that church plant didn't grow up in that church because the church didn't exist. And so they had very little community or connection to each other. There weren't very many of them. And so trying to rally them and gather them around this exciting new youth ministry, especially the seniors, wasn't going to happen. So I realized early on, I just kind of need to let this class go, and I need to build some relationships with the younger students who are going to be with me for a while, and not that I didn't care about those other kids, but just realize my limit of influence on their life was going to be very short, and they probably didn't really care. And just kind of let that go. Just accept that as a present reality and move forward.
Which is a hard thing to do because those are the, you know, in student ministry, those juniors and seniors are the easier ones to connect
with.
They're
the ones you want to
maturity.
Yeah,
right.
Sure. Yeah, so I kind of gave that up, and I began building relationships with the students who I knew I was going to have a chance to work with for a number of years. How about you? What were some of the challenges you had?
Yeah, I think, well, for me, you know, when I came here to Maryland, there was a student ministry, and there was a guy there was one guy before me who had been there for 7 years and had basically started the student ministry and established it. So I was following in someone's footsteps.
Did he leave in a healthy way?
He left in a healthy way, and it was fine that people liked him. There was no controversy, there was no anything.
That's good.
Which is also challenging because now you're coming in trying to replace somebody who was beloved.
You're filling big shoes.
Filling big shoes.
It's a different challenge,
absolutely. And again, I would say probably the same thing that you just talked about, where those juniors and seniors that were here when I came, they were very difficult to connect with.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they had spent 6 years or 7 years in youth group with somebody else as their leader.
Yeah.
That person was gone now, and now I'm here, and who are you, and why should I give you the time of day? And so, so again, not that I ignored them. I just realized, again, pretty early on, just like you did, that throwing a large investment of my emotional energy and time into those was just going to be like banging my head against a wall. And so I cared for them. I liked them, and that was all fine and well, but I just had to invest my time elsewhere. But probably the bigger challenge was, obviously, I came in with ideas of how this should run and what it should be like. But there was something already established. And so the danger for me, and of course, I had the fortune of having been in student ministry for 15 years before I came here.
So you had some experience, some ideas you were bringing to the table.
So I had some ideas, but I also knew that I needed to bring those ideas at a relatively slow pace.
Right.
When I came here, they were meeting together, middle school and high school together. And that was something that I just thought, I don't see this as a good plan. I see lots of detriments here, and I really would like to see the group split, but I knew that if I came in with guns a-blazing, ready to split the groups and start a specific middle school ministry,
hey, the Savior's here. Let me loose.
Probably would not feel very good. And so as much as I wanted to, as much as I deeply desired to just make that my first order of business and go from there, I had some wise people speak into my life, some other youth pastors that said, you know, you might want to spend a year building relationships, you know, building trust, getting them to the point where they trust that you know what you're doing and that you have the best interest in mind.
A year in youth ministry feels like an eternity, though.
It feels like forever. It feels like forever. But, you know, spent that year talking to key leaders in the church, talking to key volunteers in the ministry, and even talking to key students about, hey, you know, thinking that this might be where we go, let's talk about that. And, of course, there was positive feedback to that. There was negative feedback to that, because nobody likes change. No, nobody likes it. People who say they like change are lying. They don't, especially when the change is brought to them.
Correct.
They didn't quite request it.
Yeah.
And so after a year, we started to put things into motion to make that change. We made that change. It was difficult for some, but because I took my time, which is something I think as a youth pastor, sometimes we don't do so well.
Yeah.
You know, we're kind of go-getters, again, ready to be with people and do things. And sometimes it just needs to go a little bit slower. And so that was a challenge, but it ended up working out pretty well. And again, not perfectly. I had a class of eighth grade girls that were solid student leaders, but they were going to be eighth graders the year that we made the switch to a middle school ministry and a high school ministry. And they were livid. They just, you know, they spent 2 years with the older kids.
Yeah.
They were eighth grade girls, which means they were more on the mature side, more than the guys were.
Yeah.
And so they were much more comfortable with the high school kids than the middle school. And I just told them, sorry, you're out.
Yeah.
You got to hang out with these, you know, sixth grade boys. We survived that. Yeah. They were a bit of a pill that year.
Yeah.
But they came around and ended up being incredible high school leaders for me down the road. But
that's great.
But there was rough waters, for sure.
So maybe you're in this position, you're in a new position that's never been at your church before. You've never had a youth pastor before. And you're creating things from scratch. You got to build those key relationships with key leaders in the church. The volunteer that you recruit is very important. The children of key leaders in the church, they're important to build relationships there. Maybe you're filling somebody's shoes, somebody who's been there before. In Matthew's case, you were filling the shoes of someone who left on good terms. You had changes to make, brought them slowly, and you know things were healthy. You may be in a position where there's been turmoil, and somebody was fired, someone left under bad circumstances, everything's in an uproar, and here you are trying to put, you know, water on the fire. The same principles apply. You still have to build those key relationships. You still have to take your time in instituting changes and just, you know, be present in that place for a while to understand the culture, to figure out what you're doing before you move forward too quickly. So that's part of what the Youth Ministry Sherpas podcast is all about. We want to help build that community, provide some forums for some conversation, and just share the wisdom and the experiences and the lessons we've learned, for good or for bad, over the years with you. And hopefully, you know, this will be helpful to you as we move forward from this time.
Yeah, so we're going to put some questions on the show notes that you can find at our website, youthministrysherpas.com. www.thebusinessmindset.com.
Yeah, we have three questions that you can ask yourself. And one of them is, what do I need to learn about this culture that's unique to this particular place? The second question is, who are the key leaders and the friends that I need to join me in this ministry and build relationships with? And then the third question is, look at your responsibilities and your schedule. Is what you are doing sustainable, not only now while you're 25 or 28 or fresh off the seminary boat with tons of energy and time, but maybe 5 years from now when you have three little kids at home, or 10 years from now when you turn 40 and you suck at dodgeball, and 20 years from now when dodgeball and lock-ins are like cuss words in your head because you know what they're going to do to your body, will you still be able to sustain the kind of schedule and rhythms that you're instituting in your ministry?
And so we'd love to invite you guys into some conversations around those questions. And so you can find those questions on the show notes, but then we'd encourage you to go to the Facebook page and interact with us. Answer those questions out loud, and we'll start some dialogue and some conversation together again. Helping each other to kind of help figure out. Maybe you don't know the answer to those three questions, or maybe you do, and somebody says, well, I wonder if you're actually, you know, we want to be open to those conversations to just keep getting better.
Yeah. So if you would share this podcast with your friends, youth ministry friends, so get the word out, subscribe to us, and if you could leave us a review on iTunes, we would greatly appreciate that as well, so that our podcast can get into the ears and the hands of more and more youth workers, and hopefully bless them.
All right, and we look forward to the conversation over these questions on our Facebook page.
Our next episode, we're going to be talking about the things you cannot change. It's an interesting conversation, things that, you know, you wish you could do, but when you realize you can't, it actually frees you up to continue on and to not be discouraged.
And to figure out how to work within the framework of the things that you cannot change. Looking forward to that conversation as well.
So thanks for being here for episode 2 of Youth Ministry Sherpas. Glad you're with us. We want to be here helping youth workers.